They were hanging white folks in Louisiana and shooting black folks in Richmond. Union troops had invaded Mexico, Canada, Cuba, and every brothel in the South. Confederate troops were holed up in the Smoky Mountains, waiting for the signal to attack. The casket of the First Lady, who had drowned last year while visiting relations in Illinois, had been exhumed and found empty. Meanwhile, Abe Lincoln, facing an impeachment trial, was sneaking off to see a medium in New York, and Jefferson Davis, one-time leader of the rebellion and supposedly locked up in Fort Monroe, was actually in Philadelphia, sipping champagne with his rich friends. None of this was true, but all of it was in the newspapers. It was late winter of 1867, nearly 2 years after the end of the war, and reporters were inventing rumors almost faster than their editors could print them. The nation, everyone agreed, was a mess. If only it had been old Abe who was shot dead that night instead of Andy Johnson, his vice president. If Johnson were president now, so moaned the editorial writers, the nation would be in considerably better shape. All of which helped explain why Abigail Canner had finally given up on reading the papers. She was smarter than any five reporters put together and perfectly capable of making up her own stories. But she didn't want to be a reporter. She had a brother and a distant cousin in that business already. She wanted to be a lawyer. This was impossible, she was told, given her color and her sex. But she was determined to try. Unaware of how her ambition would carry her to the center of great events. The romance, like the violence, came later. On the first Monday in February, in the year of our Lord 1867, or in the larger history, 1 month exactly before the trial of the 16th President of the United States was to begin, Abigail set out upon her journey. Ignoring her mad brother's derisive insistence that nothing good would come of the effort, she rode the horse-drawn streetcars through the filthy snow to prove to the world that she was indeed the woman she claimed. She had her college degree and her letter of employment and the stony conviction learned from her late mother that, whatever limitations the society might place on ordinary Negroes, they would never apply to her. Abigail boarded the 7th Street line, which passed near her home, then changed at Pennsylvania Avenue, choosing the second row to avoid a squabble with the white citizens of Washington City, who seemed to consider the rear of the car their own private preserve, but also to avoid the ignominy that came of riding up front with the driver, where nowadays most men and women of her race tucked themselves without a second thought. A discrimination until recently enshrined in city law. The war was over. The slaves were free, and the government of the United States guaranteed the rights of the colored race. But here in the nation's triumphant capital, in the midst of the most frigid winter in years, everybody was at pains to establish who was who. Abigail was a tall, young woman, unfashionably slender, with smooth, mahogany skin that bespoke more than one dallying slave master in her ancestral tree. The hooded coat she wore against the cold was a product of the finest dressmaker in Boston, a gift from her uncle, a physician. The trim was silver fur. The face that peered out suggested a woman who pondered a great deal over the issues of the day, and very deeply, but frowned on most forms of fun. Her gray eyes were sharp and probing. Her dimpled chin seemed confident and disapproving. Men tended to find her reasonably pretty, even if not so vivacious as her older sister, Judith, or so innocently beautiful as her younger sister, Louisa. They also tended to find her too distant, too judgmental, too intelligent altogether, for Abigail would always rather read another book than have another dance. Nanny Pork, who ran the Canner household, preached the evils of dancing and carousing and most forms of enjoyment, and although Abigail was not precisely the sort to do what she was told, she regarded Nanny with the sort of awe usually reserved for less visible agents of divinity. Abigail was 21 years old, and parentless, and black, and expecting somehow to affect the course of history. Maybe even starting today.